Welcome, travelers. I'm Josh.
And I'm Lee Wanika, and this is Tabletop Journeys, where we will be your not-so-humble guides on the quest for RPG adventures.
Welcome everybody to Tabletop Journeys. Very excited to be cracking within the covers of the latest game that we're going to be playing today. Joined as always by my co-host Lee Wanika. Lee Wanika, how are things down in Connecticut this fine Saturday early humid evening?
Yeah, so things are very good. I'm in the process of moving my workspace for Tabletop Journeys. I'm actually in my new recording space. Things are kind of in flux. In fact, I literally got the computer successfully turned on, monitors and lights set up roughly 35 seconds before I was supposed to sign into the recording session. So
I think 35 seconds is being generous. Yeah.
Plus or minus, more on the minus. But at any rate, I did my best and I am here and so excited. Finally, after several months of wanting to play the game we're playing tonight, I am getting a chance to. And we get to get back together with an old friend of the show. Not that he's old, but more that we've been friends for quite some time.
Yeah, yeah.
Sergio.
Well, watch what
Sergio
you say
from the D&D Lorecast.
Yeah. Watch what you say now. I am old as dirt. Hello, yeah. My name is Sergio from the Dungeons & Dragons Lorecast. I'm, like Lee Wanika said, old friends with these folks. We've had them on the show. We ran their adventure from the Splinterverse Media Dragonlance Companion, Trials of the Tower Initiate, for our first installment of our actual play series, Tales from the Tower. I love everything these guys do. Have the utmost respect for them in terms of just being good people, but also the minds that they have for TTRPGs.
Oh,
that's
very kind of you, Sergio. Thank you.
Appreciate that.
As fellow lovers of your show, Sergio, really very excited to be having you on the show throwing dice with us tonight. This is awesome. Can't wait. This is going
to
be a good time.
Please give my heartfelt thanks and love and joy to your patrons who took part in that game that you ran of ours and the games that you're running currently. I love them. They're wonderful role players. The way you run games is amazing. I learned things from your show and I learned things from the way you GM, and that's awesome.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
All right. Without any further ado, let's bring on the Game Master for tonight's game. So we're going to be running through a Weird West version of Savage Worlds. And so we have the man, the myth, the legend, Pete Saloom on with us. Pete, welcome to Tabletop Journeys. First of all, how are you doing tonight?
I'm doing well, thanks. That was quite an intro. I love it.
Well, nothing if not complimentary. For folks that somehow maybe don't know, why do we have you on tonight to go ahead and run this game with us?
Short answer, because it's mine. I wrote it, right?
Yeah. That's a pretty good reason. Yeah.
No, the background is really great because it's a really organic sort of testament to the gaming community, I think, because the way I came across Tabletop Journeys and now the way I'm coming across Sergio's stuff as well is just by showing up and playing games with people I didn't know before. And I met Lee Wanika at one of the local conventions and we were just in the same room and just started talking and exchanging information and followed up afterwards. And that's how that kind of came about. And yeah, so it's great. I've published two products this year. This is the first year I've actually done anything professional with my gaming career, if you will. Yeah. And so it's been a busy, fun roller coaster year.
Yeah. Awesome. So I think before we get started, let's go around the table and just introduce who we're going to be playing this evening. I'll start since I'm currently talking. This evening, I'm going to be playing a hardened Boston detective who has moved away from the big city, seeking an inner peace that he maybe escaped him while he was on the job. Finn O'Shea is his name. So, Sergio, how about you? Who are you playing tonight?
I am playing a man of the cloth, Juan Machado, affectionately known as Padre. I had a calling to spread the word of the Lord to folks in my modest church in San Antonio. Unfortunately, a mysterious fire broke out and killed everyone but myself. The cause of the fire was never determined. However, beyond a shadow of a doubt, I am sure that there was some otherworldly force, something dark at play.
All right, Lewinica, who are you playing tonight, sir?
I am playing Michael Cartwright. I am a bargain hunter, business tradesman extraordinaire. I'm always looking for the best deal at the best price, and everything on the surface is probably not exactly what's going on underneath.
Yeah.
I'm layered, I'll just say that, and willing to take chances in ways that may not be considered legally appropriate.
Very interesting. Okay, without any further ado, Pete, I believe it is your turn now, sir. Have at it. We are your willing accomplices in whatever shenanigans are going to happen tonight. So
awesome. Thank you so much. And great introductions there. We got a good cast of characters here. We're getting right into Shadows of the Sacred Hills. We won't waste any time. We know who you guys are and what you're about. So let's just get right into the introduction here. If you have questions as we go along, I know some of you have varied Savage Worlds levels of experience. Just interrupt me and we'll take it from there. My general philosophy as a GM is to keep things moving, keep the tension high, and rules be damned if they're going to slow us down too much.
Love it.
Okay, so your posse arrives at noon on Monday, July 14th, 1884. It's about 140 years ago. Railroad station in Blackwood Gulch is little more than a flat patch of dry dirt beside the tracks with a small wooden roof and some benches for travelers. As you step off the train, cattle are being loaded into the cars further back. The town is tense and saturated with silent anxiety. You've been summoned as covert members to assist the society. An encoded telegram indicated that a local agent was investigating supernatural occurrences around the ranching town. As members of the society devoted to finding and stifling work of dark forces all across the West, you have come to lend a hand. You are instructed to seek out a man named Oliver Booth, who would be able to bring you up to speed on the particulars. He can be found at the Red Desert Palace. As you step onto the train platform, you can hear the headlines being read by a young boy selling newspapers. Read it all here, folks! Sheriff Beaumont survives an ambush by the No Good Bandits. They're known around here as the John Gage Gang. He's banged up, but he's okay, thank the Lord. Our good sheriff was bringing John Gage himself to justice when he was set upon by 10 of Gage's most ruthless men. Gage and the gunmen escaped into the countryside, but the sheriff was able to shoot his way out of trouble. Pow, 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 and scramble back home. Read it all here, folks, in black and white. And he continues selling papers as he goes.
Finn will reach into his pocket and pull out probably like a nickel and buy a paper.
Thank you, sir. Thank you, sir. He gives you a copy of the paper. He's got a dozen or so copies of this paper. Is a generous sure. name for this sort of maybe three-page small cattle town newspaper, most of which is dominated with the particulars of cattle ranching, cost of cattle feed, auction rates of cattle in Laramie, Wyoming, and all that type of exciting stuff. But there is an article that summarizes exactly what he was hollering about, which is that apparently Sheriff Beaumont was bringing some notorious outlaw into justice and was ambushed by that outlaw's gang and barely survived, losing his outlaw prisoner in the act and just barely made it to town. So that's the big drama of the little cattle ranching town of Blackwood Gulch currently.
And you said it was the John Gage Gang, was the name of it?
Yeah, and John Gage being the rustler that was being brought back in.
And what was the sheriff's name?
His name is Harrison Beaumont. Folks that play at my table or have the PDF or the book will see a map of Blackwood Gulch, which it's basically a one-street town dedicated to, as I said, mostly the cattle ranching industry. There's a few places of interest as you're walking off the train platform. You can basically see clear to the other side of town through the late afternoon dust being kicked up by people as they go about their business. What would you folks be doing as you arrived in Blackwood Gulch, knowing what you now know about the reasons for you being called here?
After my companion, Finn, buys the paper from the lad, I ask him, "My son, do you know where we could find the Red Desert Palace? We are looking for someone."
"Oh, yeah, mister. It's right of that way. Biggest building in town, I tell you." He kind of points over his shoulder, back off the train platform, down the main street. You can basically see the outlines or the silhouette of the building in the afternoon sun. One thing you note, especially you, Padre, since you're in tune with these types of feelings, is that as the afternoon sun is headed for the mountains and casting these shadows across town, it's just uneasy. It seems like the shadows are a little darker than they should be. It seems like people give an extra sort of stare over their shoulder as they're going about their business, as though they feel maybe they're looking out for something or being watched. And you feel this too, and the memories or trauma of your greatest fears start clawing at the back of your consciousness as you begin to walk through town. But the Red Desert Palace is very obvious because it's the only two-story building in town. It's also extremely ostentatious, elaborate, and gaudy from the outside. It has a beautiful wraparound farmer's porch in the front of it with columns that look to be painted some kind of golden color and are ornately carved. That's a big, beautiful calligraphy painted sign that says Red Desert Palace. This is a structure that stands very out of time and place for a sort of end of the rail line cattle ranching town, where you would expect a more stereotypical or a more down-to-earth saloon. This seems like much more five-star than what you would expect as you approach it.
So we're all walking up towards the Red Desert Palace, or are we going to meander a little bit? Are we going to mosey?
I definitely want to know more about my surroundings before I spend too much time here.
Let me ask you this, Detective O'Shea. When you mean you want to get to know more about your surroundings, do you want to just walk around and observe, or are you planning to ask questions, network with townsfolk, anything like that? How overtly would you like to go about this?
So I guess as we're leaving the train platform, I'll look over at Padre. Since you said something, how much of a hurry are you in, Padre? How moseying do we want to mosey, I guess is what I'm saying.
I loosen my shoulders a little bit. Personally, I would like to see if there's a chapel or a church here in town. There's something about this place that doesn't sit right with me.
I guess we'd be happy to join you. Might not be a bad idea to have the good Lord bless our journey here.
I can honestly say it has been a rare occasion that I have ever come to a town and gone to a church first. But I'm all about new experiences and seeing what there is to see. You take the lead, Padre.
We can go to the tavern second there, Cartwright.
Yes. Let's get right with the Lord first, and then let's get...
And then we can get wrong.
And then you can get this another kind of spirit.
With the spirit, awesome. And then dance with the devil. I like it.
And so do I recognize any sort of building that would be a church?
A steeple with a cross on it, something like that obvious you don't. However, from your travels, that a lot of these towns are not very old, and many of them are run by missions and things like that, where they're just setting up shop and usually with very meager conditions. So as you're walking down the main street here in Blackwood Gulch, you do pass a number of places, mostly mundane houses, barns, grain elevators, things like that associated with the cattle train. But towards the very end of the road, almost at the outskirts of town, there is a large canvas tent with wooden half walls, somewhere between a building and a tent erected, that does have a cross out front and indicates that it is a very small, very modest chapel, as the canvas is blowing in the wind as the evening begins to set in here.
I reckon this is a little simpler than you're used to there, Padre.
Any place can be a house of the Lord. And
sure can.
Take my Bible out and walk right in.
I'll walk in behind him, but I'll take a gingerly step through the door, just lest any lightning strike me down as I walk through.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's more of a flap, less of a door, probably, as you're entering this structure that's fairly flimsy. It is dark inside, illuminated only by a few candles up by a obviously well cared for but meager altar. At the front, there are assorted rundown pews and chairs mix match throughout the place. There's nobody in there right now except for what appears to be a older priest at the front, just sweeping dust out of the way and caring for the grounds as you walk in. Again, it is Monday evening. He's not expecting a service or anything like that. And he greets you as you enter the church and says, "Oh, welcome, travelers. Are you weary from your travels?"
As we walk in, Padre, I put my hand it almost feels like reflexive on your shoulder, and you can definitely feel there's like a grip to it, like Finn's uncomfortable. And you're not totally sure why. That maybe has never happened before, but yeah, it feels
absolutely. Take a Benny for that, Detective O'Shea.
Yes,
I'm not adding one to your pile as you're playing into your backstory there. Wonderful. So he says, basically, what can I do for you? He obviously looks at Padre first, identifying him as a fellow member of the cloth, and is very welcoming to you.
I feel Finn's hand on my shoulder and put my hand on his and squeeze it once as a way to show that I've got his back, basically. And I introduce myself. My name is Juan Machado. These are my friends. This is Finn O'Shea. Don't mind his trepidation, as you could understand. Many have not the best experience with religion, but we always welcoming to anyone. And behind me, the squirrely looking fella, is Michael Cartwright. I don't know that he has ever been inside of a church, but again, we welcome anyone and everyone. And
I've been in a couple, and generally under acceptable circumstances.
Regardless of their attendance in church, I trust them with my life, and anything that they may need or they may say, I can vouch for them. We are weary. We came to visit the Red Desert Palace.
Ah.
And as soon as I stepped off the train, I could sense that there was something off about this town. The heaviness, if you catch my drift.
First, welcome. We welcome you with open arms here at our humble church. Red Desert Palace attracts a lot of business here. I assume you must be here on cattle business, since there is no other business here. But regardless, you're welcome here. I'm glad this was your first stop. And yes, you're right. Blackwood Gulch has fallen on somewhat hard times. There's a tension in the air. It's palpable. And I do believe that it has to do with the spirit of our world and the energy that flows through it. And I think if you look to your spiritual senses, you may be able to understand that too with time. We do hope to overcome that, and we move on with optimism. We also are here in the Wyoming Territory, which is on the borders of the Sioux Nation. And so there are tensions that are very tangible and real as well between our people and the people to the north, whom we have a legal and holding treaty with currently. But there is always tension and worries there.
Yes, yes. Is there anything else that you can tell us about the town? We heard there were bandits that nearly killed your sheriff.
Oh, that's the talk of the town. He giggles a little. It's almost like maybe he doesn't really get too bothered with the legal stuff. He seemed maybe a little jaded to it. But he says, yeah, that John Gage is always running around taking what doesn't belong to him. And Sheriff Beaumont, good as he is, good sheriff for the last couple of years, just hasn't been able to get his hands on him. And then once he did, wasn't able to keep him on him for very long. But that's cowboys for you. They know the land and they know how to stay out of trouble.
I see.
Padre, this would be a good time to try a skill roll, because I think maybe a spirit roll from you would be appropriate right now to tap into the underlying spiritual feelings that are going on in this place. Just as a reminder, your faith under your skills, whatever that die type is. So for you, it is a D10. So you would roll a D10, but you also roll an extra D6 called a wild die in Savage Worlds. These are not added together. These are separate rolls. You're looking for a 4 or better from either of those rolls. Another little caveat that I didn't mention is that in Savage Worlds, dice do what's called acing or exploding, which means whenever you roll the highest value on a die, 6 on a D6, 10 on a D10, you continue to roll that die and add that total.
Ah, interesting. All right, I've got an 8 on my D10 and a 4 on the D6.
Okay, so we're going to go with the 8 on a D10. So in Savage Worlds, when there are no other modifiers, a 4 is a success, and then every increment of 4 after that is called a raise. So by rolling an 8, you've got a success and a raise. So it's a strong success, I guess we could describe it as. And as a teaching moment here, I'll ask, if you wanted to use a Benny at this point, you could redeem a Benny to re-roll that faith skill roll if you didn't like the outcome. I'm not suggesting you do that right now, but just as a point of learning how bennies work in Savage Worlds.
One quick question. How many bennies do we start with?
You start with a standard three, unless you're like Michael Cartwright, who has the edge luck, which means that he starts with four. And you can earn them throughout play. I do want to tell you guys, before you get mad at me later, that the GM also has bennies, one for each player. I do not gain them throughout play. I guess that would be a little unfair. All right, so with your success and a raise, you pick up, this priest is old, but he's very strong in his faith. You can feel that. And he's also very devoted to this place. It's quite obvious from the kind of the fear and trepidation that you sense in him that it would make much more sense to just move on. He has a very small congregation here from what you can tell by his church. It would probably be easier to just get on the train and leave, but he seems like a devout person that feels like they are making a difference here and is confident about what he does. This tension you feel coming from the towns, this anxiety or fear, is real, and it is a mixture of both normal kind of mob mentality tension that is just contagious, and also definitely something deeper than that, that probably most people wouldn't be able to tap into and feel, but you are able to feel it. It is something deeper and more spiritual than that. Nice roll.
Thank you. Having sensed that, I put one hand on his shoulder. I say, Father, I sense your unease, your dread, and I also sense that you may feel like you're not making a difference here in Blackwood Gulch. But I assure you, your work here does not go unnoticed. Not in this world and not in the next. Please keep fighting the good fight and save as many of these people as you can. If not from the John Gages of the world, but from whatever else darkness might be lurking. And I give him a sign of the cross and I start to make my way out.
Yeah, you can tell that eases some of his burden for sure. And he says, there's other good people in Blackwood Gulch too. There's other strong spiritual people, and that's why I stay, because it'll be okay. Good luck to you on your travels. Nice meeting you.
I definitely try to get the hell out of there as soon as he turns around and leaves.
Take a Benny for that, Sergio.
Huzzah! Pod Red.
As we turn to go, I let them get like a couple steps ahead, and I turn back, and I was holding my little bowler cap to my chest, and then I take it out, and I take like a dollar bill out, and I say, make sure you put this in the poor box there, Father. And then I take out two bits, and I hand it to him, and get yourself something as well. And I don't come into these churches often, so I figure if I do, might as well give him a tithe. Have a good day.
Pay your dues. Yeah, he accepts it graciously from you and disappears back into the darkness of the tent there.
Yeah, that's not creepy at all. And I walk out.
Not at all, yeah. Perfectly normal.
As soon as we hit daylight, I put my hat back on and walk on out.
Yeah, and you find yourselves back in the dusty main street of Blackwood Gulch. You're at the opposite end of town from where you came off the train station, but all the way at the other end, several hundred yards away, you can see cowboys rustling cattle out of pens and into the train cars behind the train car you arrived in, loading cattle in to be taken away, most likely to Laramie, the next biggest city, for auction. People are just going about their late afternoon chores, carrying things, yelling at children, all of that type of stuff as you step out into the road here.
Go get a drink now, yeah?
Yes, Finn, we can go get a drink.
All right, over to the Red Desert Palace you go.
Actually, as we're like walking through the streets, gentlemen, do we maybe want to think a little bit about a cover story for why we're here? Not sure that we want to be upfront about what we're looking for.
We're here to prospect some opportunities in the cattle business, see if there's some kind of deals to be had.
I just wanted to make sure that we were all on the same page. That's why we're here. The deals on the cattle trade.
Absolutely. It's always somebody looking for a little business know-how. I'm a consultant from back east, and I definitely can connect the ranchers out here with businesses back east.
That works for me and you, Cartwright. But our friend here...
Do I have the traditional like priest garb on? Do I have a collar or anything?
You can do if you want to.
Am I immediately recognizable as a priest? I guess.
Yeah, probably. Yeah. I mean, tell me otherwise, yeah.
So in like my pouch, I hide any vestments I might have that immediately identify me as a priest. And I tell Michael and Finn, I will probably just keep my mouth shut and let you two do the talking.
Not asking you to lie, Father. Absolutely. That would not be a fair position to put you out into. And I would appreciate perhaps hearing our confession this evening after we do some lying and some trickery.
Absolutely.
I don't know about that, but whether you're recognized as being a man of the cloth or not, I don't think that's a big deal. Far be it from a businessman to not want his activities to be blessed by the Lord.
That is a very good point, Michael. I appreciate your outside-the-box thinking.
Always, but I ain't confessing. I have it on good authority that if you're confessing, you gotta mean you were actually sorry and don't intend ever to do it again. I'm not so sure that's me just yet. We'll see, but maybe not just yet. I don't mind contrition. Sketchy on the confession.
Take a Benny Lee Winika.
Padre can't help but shake his head and smirk a little.
Absolutely. Gotta put up with him.
Let's go find that beverage.
Yeah, the Red Desert Palace is, as I mentioned previously, very ornate on the outside. Really stands out as just way too expensive or fancy a business to be in such a kind of small nowhere town. There are people all along the front porch smoking pipes and cigars and talking, doing business and just chatting in the evening. They don't look like particularly fancy people. They look like cattle business people and ranchers and people involved in the industry, but they are all over the front porch there. It looks like a busy, thriving business as you step up onto the porch. The front door are those classic swinging saloon doors, but then there's an ornate velvet curtain beyond that that really stands out as needlessly luxurious as you push it aside and walk into the Red Desert Palace. The interior is even more ornate than the exterior. It's a very large first floor bar room / restaurant / gambling tables. Everything is very high quality. There are big hanging chandeliers from the ceiling. There are two big ornate staircases, one on each side, that go up to a second level where presumably there are rooms to rent. People are standing and seated. Most of them, it seems, conducting negotiations or just chatting about the day's events. Some are playing cards at the gaming tables in the back, and some are up by the bar ordering drinks from a bartender, middle-aged man, just serving drinks with a little towel over his shoulder and a kind of fancy vest on. What stands out probably more than the ostentatious interior decor of this place is one gentleman in particular who is bouncing around from group to group, talking very loudly and shaking people's hands and sort of lording over the room. He's dressed in what appears to be some kind of red silk jacket with golden filigree on it. This is something maybe you've seen in a photograph or heard described, but it's very strange to you. He's an older man, probably in his mid-60s, bald, short, stocky build, and he's wearing a bunch of sort of gaudy jewelry as he bounces around talking to people, holding a snifter of some kind of liquor in his hand as he trots along and talks to people. It's also very obvious people are paying deference to him, that he must be someone significant as they're greeting him and acting very complimentary towards him as he's welcoming people into the facility.
Oh, Hugh Hefner's grandfather. Got it. Okay.
Jasper Hefner.
Yeah, Jasper Hefner.
You mentioned that we're in town to find an Oliver Booth. Do we know what Oliver Booth looks like? Do we have a description of him or a picture?
You don't. You know you can find him here. You had some secret intel communication that let you know you could find him here, but you don't know who he is. You've never met him before.
Okay.
So, obviously, the room itself doesn't really fit in with the surroundings of the town. I'm getting that feeling, right? The building is an 11 and the rest of the town's a 5, right? So, something doesn't jive here. What about the people in the building? We've now walked up and down the streets both times. I feel like I could get a feeling for the type of people that live here. Do the people in the Red Desert Palace seem like they're those folks, or do they seem like different folks? Oh, I want to compare the people inside versus the people outside.
They seem mostly like just regular ranching type folks. There are some people that are a little more business dressed, as though maybe they also came in to talk cattle negotiations and things like that. But everybody seems very much down to earth, trying to make it, trying to work in a tough industry, in a tough area. Nobody has like really significant signs of wealth, aside from the gentleman we just described,
sure,
who obviously stands out. Some people probably have a few more bucks than others here and there, but largely you would expect to see women in gowns and men in tuxedos and things like that in this sure type of decor, and you don't.
So that probably makes this gentleman stand out even more if everyone else is very plain and he's...
Yeah, it's almost right clownish, yeah, yeah, the way it stands out, yep.
And then I know that we are looking for Mr. Booth because of the work that we're doing with the society, but what else do we know about him? He's the only one that stands out in the entire room, so it's an easy assumption to go ahead and make that he's the dude we're looking for, but I would want to have more than go... like. Finn is fine going on intuition, but it'd be nice if he's trying to go ahead and be a little quiet because of the nature of the town here. Mm-hmm. Do we know anything else about this dude?
You don't right now, but here's what you could do is you have a room full of people,
yep,
who probably know most of what's going on in this tiny town. If you guys would like to, you can do what's called networking in Savage Worlds, and you can take some time and you can go around and talk to people either nicely or not so nicely, and buy some drinks and things like that, and do some networking on a particular topic. In this case, perhaps Oliver Booth or any other topic you want. And we can see how you do and what information you get.
I was waiting for an in, and networking is something I do quite well. I was going to make sure I get a beverage, and I definitely was going to network around. I just talked to a few folks. As opposed to asking directly for Booth, I would start with, who's the showstopper in the flashy jacket? And see if that name comes up. And if it does, then I'll go from there. And if it doesn't, then I would work in asking about Oliver Booth in the whole process. But when it comes to common knowledge and or criminal networking, I have the streetwise edge, which gives me a +2 to common knowledge and criminal networking.
Okay. All right. So it's going to take you a little while to do that because you can't just march up and do it. You have to make it tactfully around the room and ask your questions. Probably take you about an hour to do that. And in the meantime, while you're doing that, we've got Padre and Finn. You guys going to just hang out, or would you like to assist him in any way, or what are you thinking?
Yeah. Why don't you go ahead, Sergio? How do you want to play this?
I will saddle up to the bar, order a gin and a water, and slowly pour the gin like down on the floor, pretend I'm drinking it.
I like it.
All right.
Just lay claim there to that area and just don't really want to start up conversation with anyone. I just want to be as nondescript as possible.
Yeah.
Okay. Very good.
I would join him at the bar, and if I can assist by taking a more investigatory angle, right? So strike up conversation with the bartender. I would order whiskey, neat, not that they, 150 years ago, they may not even have ice cubes. So that, and just talk to the bartender about, we're new in town, we're looking to go ahead and make some connections back east. Is there anyone in particular that we should be talking to? That sort of thing. But definitely where I think that Michael is probably playing more like social butterfly, handshakes and kissing babies and stuff like that. More political, if I may. I'm definitely more, to a trained ear, it would sound like I'm interrogating, or at least investigating.
Absolutely.
I can't take the fish out of water, right?
Okay. Let's do Michael Cartwright's persuasion roll, which you're going to have a +2 modifier to because of your streetwise edge. So you've got a d6 and a +2 modifier, and remember to roll an extra d6 as your wild die.
Wild die. Got it. I've got a 6, and that would be on the wild die, inclusive of the +2.
Okay, so it was like you rolled a 4, and it ends up a 6. Perfect. Okay, perfect. Are you happy with that result?
A lot of bennies. I think I might want to re-roll that.
Okay.
Yeah, so we're going to pitch a benny. And
do I
re-roll the wild die or just the regular die?
Re-roll everything, and you can also revert to this previous roll if you don't like the next one. You're not tied to the re-roll.
I like the re-roll. It's a 7 plus the 2, which gives me a 9.
Okay, so you've got a 9. And then, Finn, why don't you roll your persuasion as well? You're going to roll just a straight roll while your at the bar interviewing the bartender and other patrons up there.
That is, I'm going to be blowing a Benny because I've got a 4 on my regular die, a 2 on my wild die, so I will also burn a Benny.
Well, so you know, if you have a 4 on your regular die, that is a success.
Oh, okay, well, there we go.
We're looking for a 4. Yep.
Oh, so that's right, yeah.
You can always use a Benny to try and get another raise or something like that, but you do have a what's called a regular success.
As long as I have success, that's fine.
Okay.
And really raises quickly, are every 2 or every 4?
Increments of 4. So a 4, an 8, a 12, etc.
Really quickly. My suit was a success with 1 raise.
Yes, it was.
While we're talking Bennies, I have an ability called Common Bond, where I can freely give my bennies to others.
Yes.
Do I do this after their roll? Does it have to be done before their roll?
Whenever.
Okay.
Yep. You just hand them over, subtract them from yours, and tell us who you're giving them to. Yep. Okay. So let's start with Michael Cartwright. So you were using specifically your streetwise, which means you were actually talking to some of the slightly less savory folks in the establishment and probably had to play a couple hands of cards and just speak the language of these folks subtly until they trusted you enough to give you any type of scuttlebutt about Blackwood Gulch, but you were quite successful in doing so. And what you found was people in Blackwood Gulch are pretty tough people. They're pretty much take care of yourself type of folks. It's not a place that you would say is like overrun with crime or anything like that, but certainly the John Gage gang is very notorious in this area, and not everybody is totally against them. You spoke to a few people in the room that said, yeah, they steal cows, but they're stealing cows from rich people, and they're trying to get by, and oftentimes we've had to trade with them for things that we couldn't get, and things like that. Maybe it's not the end of the world. Everybody's just trying to live out here. And he tells you a little bit about that, and because you roll a raise, you actually even hear a little bit of a rumor that John Gage has an old hideout in what used to be a factory for building wagon wheels that is out by an old dried up riverbed about a half day's outside of town. And you're not sure the truth of that, but basically some people mentioned that they used to be hiding out there when they were talking about the ambush on the sheriff. One of them said, yeah, but they were hiding out at the wagon wheel factory like they used to, and that's where they got them. Something like that. Now, Finn, you were up at the bar and you were not engaging with the same types of folks or in the same manner. You were being a little bit more casual and general with the folks up there. And you were able to very easily, because of the bartender, identify who Oliver Booth was. And he is certainly that man in the crazy outfit. The bartender tells you so because Oliver Booth is his boss and is the owner of this establishment and is a local legend who made his fortune in the cattle industry and has since retired to being a hospitality hotel owner here and likes to just run around and be social with his patrons and things like that. So you are certain that that's your man. Lee Winika, you were also able to determine that was Oliver Booth from the folks you were chatting with as well. Everybody seems to know him.
One thing in particular that I will ask is that, especially when he says that, you know, he's in the hospitality business, I would like to make sure that I understand when he says the hospitality business, what the hospitality is that is being offered.
It sounds about bored to you. Sounds like he's a rich guy that wanted to live in a nice hotel, but he lives out in the sticks, and so he just built it.
Yeah. All right. Fabulous. So then I will sit there sipping my second or third drinking, thankful that it's bright in here and waiting for Michael to come back.
Yeah. Once we've confirmed all the details, I'll go back with my companions, ask the bartender for another glass of that new drink that's been running around. Back east, they call it a something. I forget the name, but I like to call it a newfangled. Who knows, in a couple hundred years, they may call it an old fashioned, but for right now, it's a newfangled.
Nice. Very nice.
Awful.
All right, I'll give you a Benny.
A begrudging Benny.
Yeah. Okay, yeah, so you guys circle back. You're knocking them back at the bar and kind of, I assume, recounting your experiences here?
Yeah, I'm definitely going to share that information. And just with a little bit of focus on, we do want to be very careful. If for any reason we end up going up against this John Gage gang, not everybody in town thinks they're criminals. And we want to be careful that whomever we're talking to about them is actually feeling the same way that we're feeling about them, if in fact we have to go against them or if we have to go for them, we could very easily find people backstabbing us, so to speak.
You heard the news report from the child when we arrived in town. How could they not be criminals? Unless those who are sympathizing with them are criminals themselves.
Padre, I think you need to understand a few things. And our good friend here from Boston, he might have some knowledge of these types of things. There are certain politicians, businessmen, people of power, who do things or have things or take things that are pretty well supported by the laws they've paid under the table money to have created to their benefit. Occasionally, there are those who would work against them that find themselves on the other side of the law. Now, if those people working against those shady, underhanded politicians and power brokers are helping out the people, say, providing alms when the businessmen aren't providing a fair wage, if they're providing food when the town's poll boxes aren't enough, people will support them, report to them, help them. We just want to be very careful about what we say and to whom we say it to.
I look down and chuckle to myself. Michael, just because I am a man of the Lord doesn't mean I am ignorant to the ways of the world. I am duly familiar with the fact that power corrupts, the desire for money is the greatest evil in the world. I merely asked why people would want to associate with criminals, and all you had to say was criminals associate with criminals, birds of a feather, as you might say.
I like to say if you're hungry, your friend is always the one giving you the food.
Despite your friend's moral compass?
I've never met a compass that filled my belly, Padre. Now, I do good things because I want to do good things. I do good things because I have good friends to do good things with. I'm just saying, I had a little bit of a soft spot for people that don't seem to have friends except for some shadier folks who are willing to do nice things for them. They may not want to be a part of that. They may not even like that they're a part of that. At the end of the day, people gotta eat. And if only one group is feeding, they're gonna have a lot of friends.
And you don't find that a bit manipulative?
Oh, I didn't say that John Gage is doing this because he's a good folk. I don't know enough about that to know. What I'm saying is, that's how it works. So we want to be careful who we talk to, lest some little bird goes to talk to John about us. That's all I'm saying. I'm not casting judgments. Mine is not to judge. That is not my position. I'm just telling you how it is, Padre.
Spoken like a true man of faith. But you do have a good point. We need to be careful who we speak to if some are sympathetic to John Gage and his bandits.
Yeah, I would say that just because Sheriff Beaumont found himself on the other side of Mr. Gage's ire does not necessarily mean that Sheriff Beaumont did not deserve to be on the other side of Mr. Gage's ire.
That's a bridge I wasn't quite ready to cross yet, but duly noted.
Well, wouldn't be the first corrupt sheriff I knew.
As you guys are having this deep discussion at the bar,
quietly,
politely, Oliver Booth approaches you, and he looks delighted and curious as he prances up to you, holding his fancy glass snifter, and says in a loud voice, as though he's talking to everyone around him, not just you, "You appear to be new in town. Welcome to the Red Desert Palace. It is my privilege to welcome you to my humble home."
"Honored, and you make the best newfangled I've had in many leagues."
"Ah, yes, the recipe we got from back east."
"Oh, back east, where from?"
"Oh, I don't know. One of my colleagues in one of the big cities sent it to us by telegram, said it's what all the fancy people in New York are drinking."
"Well, that's what I hear by way of Philadelphia as well."
"Ah, yes, we've colleagues there as well. Everywhere that they eat beef."
I'll extend my hands. Mr. Booth, the pleasure is all mine. My name's Finn.
Finn? A strong Irish name, I see.
My father was an O'Shea and my mother was a Kelly.
My goodness. Good to meet you. And he gives you a handshake. His handshake's pretty strong for an old man. He's a short guy. He's probably looking up at you. Says, what brings you to town? You must have business. And if you've got business, I surely know about it.
We're more hoping to have some business, actually. We've just arrived from out east ourselves, and we're looking to make some connections out here to bring the product that Blackwood Gulch is exporting.
Are you saying that in a way that you are actually trying to deceive him or not?
Am I trying to deceive him? Sure, because that's our cover story. Right. But I am also trying to pick my words very carefully. Like, I didn't say anything about cattle, right? And I did choose the phrase product that Blackwood Gulch is exporting intentionally. I'm not being straightforward, and I'm not flat out lying to him. I'm very much trying to go ahead and, like, skirt that edge to start and see where the conversation goes.
Yeah, so what I'm going to do is make a notice roll for Oliver Booth on your behalf. So he nods his head in acknowledgement of your story, and he looks with a reading gaze into your eyes, and he looks over to Padre, and he looks over to Michael, and he can see him smiling like he's quite pleased, and he says, yes, that cattle deal that you're here to discuss with me, I remember it now, don't I? I'm sorry. It slipped my mind. Yes, I apologize. He pulls out a ornate, like, gold pocket watch out of a pocket, and he says, ah, yes, I will be available for that meeting in my private study at 7 p.m. this evening. Could you make yourselves comfortable until then? Enjoy all the fine amenities Blackwood Gulch has to offer. He laughs at that. He says, I'd be happy to meet with you about that cattle deal at that time.
I would love to discuss some steers with you at that time.
Very good, sir. Bromley, drinks for my business associates. I will see you at 7:30 or whatever I just said. Prompt, don't be late. He twirls away, and you can see there's other people already waiting to discuss things with him and shake his hand, and he's off teasing them and talking to them about things.
So I guess while we're there, I'll order some kind of meal as well. We've just gotten off a train, yeah. We walked about, we should probably eat.
Absolutely.
After you place your order, and after the bartender or the waiter, whatever, walks away. So just so we're all aware, we just got made, right? We all know what just happened there. Like, we're all on the... Right?
It seems pretty obvious that...
Yeah, yeah. Just making sure. That's...
Mr. Booth knows who we are.
At least what we're after.
Question is, as I'm eating, and this is pretty good steak. Are we going to make the meeting, or are we going to do what we got to do and blow off the meeting?
Do we view Mr. Booth here as a contact, or do we view Mr. Booth as a potential adversary?
You said made. When you say made, I'm thinking that's a challenge, that's a worry. He's a contact, and I would say we surreptitiously accelerated the development of the plan.
I think that's the question. Is he on our side or not? And I don't know the answer to that question.
Yeah, you have very little information other than that. Prior to the action of this adventure, you received secret communication that he'd be the person that could shed more light on the situation in Blackwood Gulch.
So it was made out like we should find him and talk to him, not he's a thousand-year-old vampire. Right.
Certainly the former, not the latter. Yeah.
Given that, I would say that we definitely go to the meeting, and then we did what we needed to do. We made our presence known, and we got to meet.
Cool.
It seems like he was expecting us, perhaps.
Maybe not us, but he was expecting somebody.
You weren't that subtle, Finn, unfortunately.
I mean...
However, it worked in our favor.
Yeah, that's... We were looking for the dude. I found the dude. I told the dude we were here. That's it. But before I ask this question, actually, Sergio, how well known is it by us that you have magic powers?
Is that up to me, or...?
Yes.
I would say that you... know that I have something up my sleeve, so to speak. You might not know exactly what it is, but you know that I'm not an ordinary pastor.
Okay.
That I am imbued with some kind of power.
The Lord definitely smiles upon you.
most definitely.
Yeah. So before we retire to his private office away from everybody who may see or hear anything, Padre, is there any time or energy that you need to spend to make sure that if something does go sideways, that we're all functioning at peak performance?
I think I am good to go.
Just as a point of order here, Padre has been very respectably abstaining from alcohol this evening, but Michael
and Finn have not.
And Finn have not. What we'll do before we head to the meeting, unless there's anything else you want to do around town, which you're welcome to do. He said 7:30, so you probably have an hour and a half-ish to kill. We'll have Michael and Finn both make a vigor check. Vigor is listed under your attributes, not your skills. And it is a die type. And it's actually a D8 for Finn and a D6 for Michael.
Correct.
And remember to roll your wild die with that. And we're just going to see if you tipped your cups too much or not that you should. It's Monday night in Blackwood Gulch.
That's 2 fours for me. And you said that if I spent a Benny to re-roll that, I can always go back to this roll.
You can always revert to the previous roll. The only time you can't use a Benny to re-roll a skill or a trait roll, if it's a critical failure, meaning you roll a 1 on each die, that's a critical failure in Savage Worlds, then you can't use a Benny to re-roll. That is what it is, and something terrible is going to happen. Yep.
All right. Cool. I'm going to spend a Benny to just re-roll this.
You don't need to, because you got a standard success. You're not going to succeed any better on it. You're just not drunk.
All right.
You're not going to be more sober.
Yeah.
I have a 5.
So you guys know what you're doing. As the Irish guy and the businessman, it's not your first time drinking at a meeting.
Yep. I'm also probably not going to drink for the next hour, actually. I think ordering some food.
Guy, I wish I didn't relate, but you know.
I would definitely get some food, take advantage of Mr. Booth's hospitality, but stop drinking alcohol for now. I just water for the next hour before the meeting.
Just so you know, since you did walk around town, I'm going to let you guys know the other things that are in town so that you have that information. There's not much, but there is obviously the train station. There is a provision / general store / agricultural feed and seed type of store called Prescott's Provisions. There is the Red Desert Palace, which you are in. There was a clearly marked sheriff's office that you walked by on your way to the church. And other than that, various other buildings that either were not marked with signage or appeared to be just modest housing or barns or workshops and the like. So if there's nothing else you want to do, we can just go to the meeting, or you're welcome to go do anything else you'd like to do.
I think I will keep an ear out while we're waiting. I just want to listen, less talk from me and more paying attention, because if there's things going on, I want to see if there's any context clues I get from general conversation, scuttlebutt kicking around. I want to talk enough to not seem weird, because if you just walk as a stranger up to a group of people talking and just stand there, you're going to be, you know. However, if I'm playing cards at table A, but I'm lean back looking at my hand, I'm actually listening to table B behind me and hearing what they're talking about. That's the kind of thing that I would be doing.
Yeah.
Okay. Since you did so good on the networking role previously, which broke the ice for you in the room, they obviously know you're here and are comfortable with you walking around and stuff. What I'll do is I'll have you give me a notice roll, but it's going to have a -2 modifier. It's going to be a bit tricky for you to do as you're just making your way around, killing time and trying to keep your radar up on any other tidbits you might be able to find.
With the -2, it's not going to be enough. I'm going to burn a Benny to try to re-roll that.
Okay.
I got 4 on each die.
Oh, well, wait, did you get a 4 on the D4?
I got a 4 on the D4. Oh, that
okay, so that explodes. So you re-roll that.
And that's another 3, so that's a 7.
-2
is 5, so that's my success.
That's 1 success, so very good.
No need to re-roll.
Yeah, keep the bending. You don't have to re-roll anything. Wow, yeah, that's a tough roll. Nice job. You actually are able to pick up a little more scuttlebutt. As you're making, like, boring small talk with a few people about weather and the cost of a side of beef in Laramie and things like that that they find very interesting, you're able to hear behind you some of the guys that you were playing cards with, less savory guys, and one of them's talking maybe a little bit too loud to his friend about a rumor he heard. And he says, yeah, I don't think anybody knows yet, but Sheriff's daughter went missing. And word is they've been looking for her all day. They haven't found her. And I heard from over at Prescott's Provisions, sheriff's going to be calling a town meeting. He's going to make an announcement. And they're going back and forth. Who did it? Who do you think it was? And they're like, wow, obviously it was John Gage. And they're like, no, he doesn't kidnap kids. It's robs trains and steals cattle. That's what's he need kids for? And they're like, oh, then it's probably the tribe to the north. Then it must have been them. We got a treaty. They wouldn't do that. And they're just going back and forth about that. So that's what you uncover there.
All right. I won't say anything while I'm mingling, but when we break off to head up, as soon as we seem to be alone and not anybody around, I'll say, hey, I think apparently the sheriff's daughter didn't catch how old she was, is missing. They've been looking for her, and so far, the posses they've sent out have come up empty.
I think the timing's a bit almost at least coincidental.
Yeah.
That the sheriff has a shootout with John Gage and his men. Gage escapes. And now the sheriff's daughter is missing. I know the evil that lurks in the heart of men. Sure, he's cattle rustling today, and he attempted to murder the sheriff. What's kidnapping a man of such vile practices?
One would hope there'd be some amount of dignity in kidnapping one's youngins. That's a special kind of evil. But evil nonetheless, there's a fair amount of folk that think it might be Gage. Other folk that think it might be some tribal activity up north, but I think that's more on the superstition and don't like the look of others end of things. So I would probably, based on what I've been hearing, lean towards Gage. So I'm right with you, Padre. But until we have evidence, you gotta keep our minds open.
I can, something?
Or at least our eyes and ears.
I can understand the unease that comes when dealing with people who don't look like you, act like you. I don't agree with it, but I can understand the mentality of someone having some sort of trepidation. However, as the priest told us earlier, there is a treaty, and I don't see why Sue would break that treaty for seemingly no reason.
Well, I guess I've always been of the opinion that if someone's going to do wrong, the easiest way to prepare is to have a piece of paper that says, don't worry about me, I'm not going to do wrong, until you're ready to do that wrong. But that, on a treaty, goes both ways. So whether it's the government that owns the land or the people that they're taking it from, that's about ready to break said treaty. I just like to keep an open mind knowing that could happen.
Let's not.
Personally put my chips on Gage.
Hold on now. We are about to go ahead and have a meeting with somebody who, by report from the people that sent us here, has information on what's going on. So perhaps we just pose the question to him, hey, we heard this rumor. What do you know? You know why we're here. We're investigating all angles. What do you know about this?
I agree.
If he points his finger at Gage, sure. Then we go that route. Points the finger at natives, we go that direction. But let's hold off on calling down the wrath of Uncle Sam in one way or the other before we maybe know that there's something going on here. You're do we even wrong. Know that it the daughter's missing?
That is the rumor, and I got it from enough folks that I'm willing to apply some shifts into that particular direction.
All right.
And for the record, I am not deciding one way or the other as to who I think may have done the thing that is only very likely to have happened. I am simply presenting all angles.
Yeah.
I have no judgment one way or the other. Again, mine is not to judge.
Michael,
I'm just presenting the information.
Your ability to rattle on with, como se dice, semantics can be tiresome, I will admit. There is a child missing. There is an outlaw and his gang at large. A man who very nearly killed the law enforcement agent of this town. If nothing else, it behooves us to do what we can to make sure that John Gage and his men no longer hurt anyone else. I know you seem to only look for opportunities, but I have a higher calling than that. I see evil in this world, and I must do what I can to stop it.
Benny's.
Audrey, I talk a lot, and my semi-hysterics, as you say, are legendary. But it is important to note, in the case of a missing child, whoever is responsible, they've made an enemy with me. In the case of whoever's behind whatever dirty and dark dealings have brought us here, they've made an enemy of me. If somebody wants to rustle some cattle or swipe some pay vouchers, I honestly could care less. They want to take an innocent man out and murder somebody, they've made an enemy with me. Again, I just present the information. I don't cast judgments. But on the most important parts, I just want to be helpful. I just want to do right by the people who are dependent on someone. That's what I want. Semi-histrionics aside.
I sigh deeply. Michael, I know you are a good man. And I apologize for any brusqueness I may have exhibited earlier. I just implore you sometimes to think with your heart instead of your brain. Your heart will never steer you wrong.
I truly wish that were true, Padre. Maybe someday it will be. I just gotta hang around good people like you a little bit longer.
I am not good. I simply try to make good decisions.
One of us has to.
I feel like the detective is just between you looking back and forth.
He's very slowly eating his steak.
Time rolls around, and Oliver Booth does stop socializing and heads over to a nondescript door on the back wall of this main barroom restaurant that you're in, and opens up the door. He looks around over the crowd, and he spots you, and he's pointing over at you, and he's gesturing to you to follow him. It looks like it goes into some back interior room of the building.
Obviously, I'll get up, I'll leave a tip for Bromley, and I'll start heading over. Mm-hmm.